This is The Overcomers with Missy Robertson on the Faithwire Podcast Network.
Well, this is Missy. I'm Missy Robertson, and we're here at the Laminin House. It's the house itself has an entire story of its own, doesn't it, Brandy?
It does.
So maybe one day we can get into that too.
Absolutely.
But because I would really like to share that even with my dad. That would be hilarious, actually. But the reason we're here is because of the women, not jewelry. And just to tell you a little bit about the company first, Laminin by Missy Robertson is a jewelry company that I started, but it, like I said, it's not about jewelry. It's about helping women find a new purpose in life. And this has become, ironically, one of my purposes is just helping other women. So the reason I think that, you know, we're doing this podcast is because I have learned over the past year and a half of being around these women that they're not exceptions to the rule. This is a lot more common than I was had grown to believe, because I lived a very sheltered life. And I just thought this type of things only happened in inner cities, that children were just neglected because of the circumstances that surrounded poverty or whatever it is. But it doesn't just affect that. It affects people from all social aspects. So I want the world actually to hear from some of these women, because I'm amazed. I'm amazed at how they've overcome the things that they've overcome in life. And this not just puts another story out there, another dramatic piece for somebody to be awed at, but it actually gives to me, I'm looking at faces. I know we can't see faces right now, but you can hear their voices. These are real live human beings that I didn't know could survive some of the things that they've survived, but now they're thriving. And I think they can be an inspiration to a lot more people out there than what I actually thought at the beginning. There's a lot of them out there.
People's stories really matter, and I think so many times we don't get to hear individuals' personal stories, and that's why I'm so happy that you're doing this today. So with that in mind, my first question for you, and it's a simple one, you know, how did you find Laminin, and how did you and Missy come together?
I moved here from Arkansas about 2 years ago, and was terrified, because this is a whole lot bigger for the little bitty town that I'm from.
West Monroe's bigger.
Yes. There's like 3 stoplights in Batesville. But I went to Celebrate Recovery, and I gave my story there. And one of the ladies that does prison ministry come up, and she asked me if I would go to the prison with her. And so I went there to tell my story, and I was leading a group there, and Miss Kay Robertson was there. And so she invited me to start going to her muffins. And
Muffins. Muffins is Kay's name of a group of women that she started a couple years ago, and it was basically just along the same line. She just wanted to be a mentor, basically, to some of these women, and she always has been. This is not something new for Kay. She's always done this, but they call them muffin moms. Okay, so they dropped the moms, and just because Kay just liked it better, I don't know. And Willie called them muffin tops.
They always get together and eat.
They would bring breakfast or muffins or whatever they called them, muffin moms, and drop the moms. So now Miss Kay just calls them my muffins. So,
so when Missy started this, I hadn't really had a job yet. I was in college and was looking for a job. So when Missy started, she asked Miss Kay if she had any girls that she knew that wanted a job, and she gave her my name. And then I came here, and that's how I met Missy and Laminin.
So let's go deep into your story. Take me through some of the struggles you had to overcome. And I'll just open it up to you, and you can feel free to talk about this as long as you'd like, because we really want to hear, you know, the details of what it is you faced and went through.
Okay. I guess I could say, and I'll tell you why I remember it, why I know this, because I was 2 years old. And just in case anybody doesn't know what collateral is, I'll go ahead and make a side note and define that. Collateral is whenever someone leaves something with a promise to come back and get it. Well, my mom left me and my little brother on the doorstep. She left me at the dope man's house for collateral, and she never came back. It was so bad when I was 2 years old that the dope man had to take me to DHS because my mama never came back to get me. My grandfather and his significant other, and I'll say that because they never got married the whole time that they were together, because he was married to somebody else the whole time. We didn't know that till he died. So I remember they adopted us. My grandpa, they adopted us. And, I remember this, me and my, like, till I was about 10 years old. I mean, everything was good. I remember my mom, she used to send us like balloons and stuff on the holidays, and she'd come up, and all I remember was this strange lady kept coming up to us, and she'd give us money. And I mean, we'd be playing out in the front yard, and she'd be sitting in the street in the front of the house watching us playing outside and stuff like that. And so,
And did you know who she was?
I didn't know who she was. No. One day my brother and I had rode our bicycles to the store, because back then it was safe to do that. And she came up to us and she said, "Do you know who I am?" And we were like, "No, I don't know who you are." And she said, "I'm your mom." And so,
what's going through your mind when she says that to you?
Oh, there was a whole bundle of emotions. I was mad. I was hurt. I had been lied to. Why wasn't I with my mom? I mean, my first question was why? And that was like a very, very broad question for everybody. Why? Why did you lie to me? Why did you tell me you were my mom and my dad when you weren't? Why am I not with my mom? So she took us to her house, to meet my half brother and sister and my stepdad. And, I came back and, of course, asked my grandfather why they had been lying to us. And they said it was to protect us. And I will protect me from what? You know, what are you trying to protect me from? That's my mom, you know. So after court, a couple of months of court and things like that, the judge gave us back to our mom. And this is where it gets rough. And I understand now what they were protecting me from. I was there about 3 days at my mom's house, being back in her custody, and I was smoking pot. They were introducing me to pot. 2 weeks later, my hands and feet were being tied to the bed, the headboard and the footboard of my mom and dad's bed, and methamphetamines was being shot into my arms. And my stepdad, while my hands and feet were already tied, would break me and molest me with my mom helping him. I remember for that period of time, I mean, it was bad. We didn't have power. We didn't have water. So I'd go to school and everybody used to call me. My last name was Barnes before I got married. They used to call me the Barnyard Ape because it was so bad. They would sell me to the pimp. A 10-year-old little girl would give in a blow for $20. It was selling her body for $40 at truck stops and just being used and sold by a pimp so that they could continue to get high. And for a while, the drugs, you know, they kept me so comatose that I didn't realize what was going on until it became my own addiction that I had to feed. At school, I remember one time I had been sent to the nurse for malnutrition because I had been starved literally almost to death. I had sores all over my arms, all over my, I mean, just from them shooting me up with needles because my arms just couldn't be used anymore. And they tried to hide it as long as they could. And I remember that I lied when the DHS workers, because I was raising my brother and my sister. And I felt like I was, in a sense, raising my mom too. We didn't have much. I mean, I couldn't get a job and pay for the power and electricity and things like that. But I made sure that they had their homework, and I made sure that what we had, that they took care of. I was 10 years old. I mean, I didn't know how to even properly take care of myself hygienically. So, you know, like when your period starts, that's the things that our mom is supposed to tell you. Well, I never got that talk, you know. So when I got sent to the nurse, she told me that there is a God. And that's the first time that I ever had even heard that he had existed. And she told me that he loves me, and she planted a seed that would later, probably 8 years later, would manifest for me to even start thinking about that. I got made fun of all through school. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, they barnyard ape. I mean, people would pick on me. I mean, I had a bottom locker and they'd be on the top locker and they would purposely drop books on my head, you know, just and talk about me. I mean, I got ridiculed all through high school. It was terrible because, I mean, I was nasty. I mean, I literally was nasty.
How would you not be nasty going through what you were going through?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what to do. I was high. I mean, and when drugs are coming out of your system, it smells 10 times worse than someone who doesn't typically take a bath. I mean, it's just, it makes it, it like intensifies the smell. It was really, really bad. But what was I supposed to do? So, I got in a lot of fights, needless to say, in high school. I've broken lots of noses. I have. And I mean, I was a fighter. I'm not a very big person, but I promise I got real, real strong through all of that, in more ways than one. I was about 16. I caught my first charge. I was caught stealing dream catchers. I thought that it would make the nightmares stop. Because I was tormented not only when I was awake, but when I was sleeping too. It was a constant torment. So I thought these dream catchers would help, but I didn't have them very long before I got caught. So when I went to court, they asked me, did I steal them? And I told them, yeah, I did. And I told them why. So they emancipated me. They made me an adult at 16 years old. Well, this girl has been obviously taking care of herself for this long. We might as well make her an adult where she's able to do it.
Did you tell them what was going on?
I did. I did tell them at that point. I was like, this is why I took the dream catchers. I didn't get in trouble. I mean, you know, they were like, they were thinking about charging me and sending me to this and this and this place or whatever. I was sent to Rivendell so that I could come off of the drugs. But,
Is that like a rehab center?
It is. It's mm-hmm. kind of not really a rehab. It's just like a treatment program mm-hmm. For teenagers. And I was there for about 2 months. I did the bare minimum. I just did what they told me to do and knew that as soon as I got out that I would do the same thing that I did when I come in there because that's the only way that I knew how to survive.
That was your normal. I mean, during that time, it just became how you lived, I imagine.
Yeah, that's all that I knew. I mean, I was 10 years old. That's how I was raised to be, was to steal and lie and manipulate. And I could use my body for anything. You know, I could do whatever I tell. It got so bad for a while that I didn't even remember what my name was. Like, I was Jane Doe because I was so many different people for the men that I was selling myself to. I was Jane Doe when I went to prison. I got caught manufacturing methamphetamines. And I went to prison. I mean, before I went there, I would go for like 3 weeks. I would just go and go and go and go and go. And I remember I would wake asleep sometime. I would wake up walking across the street. Sometimes I'd wake up in ditches and everything that I had would be stripped from me. I would be naked in a ditch. I was raped more times than I can remember. It was a lifestyle. And that's where I put myself. I didn't have anybody to blame but myself. Because at first I was a victim of what my mom and dad were doing to me, and then I just became a victim of my own choices. So when I went to prison, I was Jane Doe, like I was saying, and I did 7 years in there, 7 years flat.
How old were you when you went in?
I was 17.
17.
Yeah. For the first 4 years, I was in there, I was in a lockdown facility, and they had these little things on the door called a bean hole, and that's where they put your tray in through. In the lockdown, you can get out 1 hour a day if you want to. Well, I was so used to not taking a shower properly that I didn't want to get out. I just wanted to be left alone. I wanted everybody to leave me alone. And it was so bad that I would throw my feces out of the bean hole because I didn't want anybody even coming to my door. I had a wreck, too. This is kind of a guideline, so forgive me. I'm not putting it in order.
No, don't be sorry.
I had a wreck before I went to prison. I was 16. When they emancipated me, I found myself in Florida. I've got charges, Philadelphia, Florida, California, Atlanta. I mean, I was all over the place. Stealing vehicles or whatever, Grand Theft Auto, But I went through the windshield and the car rolled over my head and crushed my skull. And because I was so high, it's what saved my life. I know that might sound crazy, but because I was high and I feel like I seen Jesus, the helicopter airlifted me. I remember I'm cutting my clothes off with my head laid open. I remember everything. I should have died there. I was pronounced clinically dead. My eyes were set. God had obviously had plans for me. And because of what I was doing, God used that too, even in that situation. So when I was sitting in there in the hospital, I had to learn how to walk again. Literally had to learn how to walk again. And it was the most alone that I had ever felt. And I was still Jane Doe. I didn't know my name. I did remember the lady, the nurse, you know, I remembered her telling me about that God. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try to get out and I'm going to try to do better. Well, I tried for about a year, and with every door that I tried to walk in closed in my face, I just went back to doing what I knew what to do.
And this was before jail.
Yes. And that's when I was like, okay. And when it got really, really, really downhill, and that's when I started manufacturing meth and got busted and went to prison. So, I remember this little old lady when I was in prison. Everybody warned her not to come to my door. Because they would, I mean, even when she did come, she brought me a Bible. And I remember I cussed her like a dog. I mean, I told her I didn't want it. I don't want her. I don't want you to. But something in me took that Bible anyway with me saying, I don't want it.
Did you know what it was? Did you have any idea what was in it?
I had no clue. I had never opened a Bible at this point. I had no clue what it was. But when I opened it, she had highlighted Jeremiah 29:11 to me. For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, plans for a future and a hope. And that stood out to me. For me, you know, like, I'm sitting here throwing crap out of my beanhole. I'm Jane Doe. I don't even have a name. You know, I remember there was a barracks, a treatment barracks right beside us. And it was called PALS, Principles and Applications of Life. And they used to wake up every morning and they'd sing this gospel music. And it would wake me up. I would wake up to that every morning. And I would beat and I would bang. I'd wait till they go to sleep. And I'd beat and I'd bang. And just hopefully just trying to torture them. And they'd wake up singing praises again anyway. And I'm like, man, is that what he's talking about? You know? So I got out and I went to that.
Take a deep breath. Take some time. This is
a lot. It's a lot.
I'm just trying to think about what was next, you know?
So she gave you that Bible and you started reading through it.
That was just, I didn't understand what it was. And what I was saying earlier is about a definition, you know? Everybody that I talked to, I wanted to know who he was, and they were giving me a definition. This is who God is. This is who God is. But that's not who he was to me. And I couldn't find him through that. I could never find out who God was by somebody telling me. I wanted to know for myself. I wanted to know who he was to me, for me. So I got out of prison and I got pregnant.
And how old were you at this point? Because you said it was about 7 years. You went in at about age 17. So I'm guessing early to mid-20s or even late to mid-20s, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
It's hard to remember because I tried to block most of that out and I didn't even know my name. So
it's a lot. It's a lot. Well, Missy, for you, as you were learning this story and hearing it, what was going through your mind and heart the first time? Because you had shared with me some of the details before we even recorded. And as I was hearing it, I was just so shocked.
Well, when you asked me to do this podcast, of course, you didn't know these stories, and Brandy is the first one that comes to my mind because it's the most horrific story I've ever heard to my face, you know. And when I asked Miss Kay, you know, do you have any girls that you would recommend that need a job or whatever, and she just gave me four names. And the four girls came over and was like, okay, great, I'll hire you. I didn't really know anything about them. I really didn't need to because Ms. K recommended them, and that was good enough for me. And so when I heard Brandy's story because I wanted this place to be an open environment, non-judgmental, no criticism, but just welcoming. And in order to do that, you have to be open with each other. And so I wanted to hear it, and I know everybody else wanted to hear it. I think it just breaks the ice with everybody if we all realize we're broken in some way or another. And so we had a night to where we all came here to the Laminin House, and it was just women, and Brandy shared her story. And that's how I first heard it, was in a group setting. And she was very open, like she has been today. And I've been around ministry long enough. I mean, I'm 46 years old. My dad's a gospel preacher. We've had people in our home the entire time we've been married. And I had to learn early on that even though I wasn't raised in those kinds of circumstances, that you can't be shocked. If you act like, then it that wall goes up. And so inside, I was crumbling listening to her, thinking, oh gosh, I'm gonna get upset. Because I'm like, I love her so much now, it's hard to hear it. And at the beginning, I didn't really know her that well, and it affected me in a traumatic way. Now listening to it, I've been fighting tears again because I love her as a person. I know her, and she's so different, and it doesn't seem like it's the same person, which is amazing to me. And that's what God does.
I was just going to say, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what God does.
If you let him, you know, like there's so, she's a tough girl. Brandy's a tough girl. And, but you know, even recently, just a few months ago, I had some struggles I was going through here, and I caught her on a Wednesday night. It was so funny because, I was thinking, I need to talk to Brandy. I need to see what she thinks about this. I wonder when's the next time I'm going to see her. And I was walking up to the church parking lot, and there she was standing right inside the door. I hadn't seen her in weeks. I was like, okay, God, I'm grabbing her right now because you put her right inside those double doors. And so I did. I pulled her and I was like, I got to talk to you about something. And I love about her because she doesn't look at me as a celebrity. She doesn't look at me as, oh, Missy's the one that's got it all together. I'm not adequate enough to talk to her. She just laid it out there. She was like, "You, this is what you need to do." And she kind of got, in my face, you know.
Sometimes you don't need that, though, right?
Right there in the church foyer, you know. And I love that about her because she's convicted because of what Jesus did through her, and she saw what I needed and wasn't intimidated. And she just laid it out there, and it really, really helped me make a decision that I needed to make. And it was tough, but I also saw her loyalty to me as my sister in Christ, that she needed to tell me something that might've been hard for me to hear, but she did it anyway. So, I know we kind of got off about
but that's great.
But that's what, you know, God brings people together from all walks of life. And again, I grew up very sheltered, which I'm glad I did. I don't regret that. I want my kids to be the same way. I don't want to introduce them to the terrible things of this world. However, if God wants to use their story to affect other people, I want them to be just like me in terms of open, not shocked in a way that I don't know what to do and I feel like I can't help. Yes, I feel inadequate sometimes. Not knowing what they've been through, but God gave me skills and gave them skills for us to help each other.
And you know, Brandy, just to come back to you and your story, you know, having gone through all of this, I guess I have like 15 questions going through my mind right now. But the first one I would ask was, at what point, you know, you're in prison, you're going through all of this, when you say, where you kind of say to yourself, okay, God, I know who you are. I'm going to accept you now, and I'm going to let this change my life. I'm going to let you change my life. What was that? I guess I always call it a pivot point when you make that change, that concerted effort in your life. And in your life, it was a pretty stark change. So can you just take me through some of that?
The stark change for me, I would have to say, that wasn't my rock bottom. You know, everybody has to hit their rock bottom before they can ever try to reach up or go forward from the things that they've been through. And God knew exactly what he was doing whenever he made me a mama. He thought, even though, I mean, he blessed me with my daughter. I mean, he didn't care. He didn't care. I mean, he knew that I needed her. He knew that I needed her. And he gave her to me. And that baby, she's anointed. I remember the first time that I held her in my arms. And she looked up with me with them big brown eyes. And then I thought about, you know, well, Jesus gave his son, and how much I loved my daughter. Oh, my God, that was more love than I can give. And love is something that I have never been shown ever in my life at that point. And I had to love this little girl, and I'm thinking, I'm going to mess her up. I'm going to, you know, I don't even know what to do with the baby. I barely knew how to take care of myself. But I was going to do whatever I had to do. To take care of her, and I was with whatever sacrifices I had to make, I would do it for my little girl. And I ended up going back when she was 2 months old, going back to prison for selling drugs, because, like I said, that was the only thing that I knew. Even that wasn't my pivot point, but it may help me to understand Jesus's love for me. It put that into perspective in a very, very great way. But when I had to go back to prison when my little girl was 2 months old, that broke me. When I had to look at my little girl through a glass window and I couldn't touch her while I waited to go to prison, I had to watch her grow up for about 7 months through a glass window. And then whenever I got to prison and they brought her to see me, she wouldn't let me touch her. She wouldn't let me. I mean, I held her, but she would be sleeping and she'd be fussing the whole time because she didn't know who I was. I remember she used to spit up on my clothes, on my uniforms, and we're supposed to wash them once a week, but I would keep it so I could smell her spit up, just so I could smell what she was, I could smell her. I remember promising her I would never leave, and I did, and that's what broke me. I said, I will never do this again. I will never do this again. My daughter needs me. So I got out. I got out again, out of prison. I spent about a year there. It was right after her first birthday. And I've been clean ever since. I started going to CR in Arkansas. And
what's CR again?
Celebrate Recovery. Yeah. I remember they used to tell stories about how I would growl at them. Like, I was so dark. I was so dark and so bitter. I just had so much weight on me that I didn't even know how to begin to let go of. So I just started listening. I heard somebody's testimony in it. I was like, okay, I remember I gave my life to Christ. My birthday, I call it, is October 24th, 2011. That's my birthday. That's the day my life started over. And every day since then, every day I find something else that I need to let go of. I mean, it's not a one-time thing. A lot of people, like I was saying earlier about the definition and demonstration of God. Well, when I moved here from Arkansas, and I love everybody there. They were really great people, and they loved on me a lot. But I wasn't really growing. You know, I wasn't really. I mean, they were showing me love, but they weren't trying to teach me while they were showing me love. I don't know if that makes sense or not. I wanted to know who God was. I needed to know who God was.
The deeper sort of.
Yes, and I wasn't getting that. And Miss Kay, I love her groups and everything, but they eat a lot, you know?
It sounds like a place I'd love to be.
You know, they eat a lot, and I love her. And I mean, I feel like the love of God is there, and they're really godly women, but I've always felt a little out of place, you know, because they are so much more developed spiritually than I am. That's the way I've always felt. I've always felt out of place, like I don't belong, you know, because... I'm just different. I'm just different. And then I guess that's the, I know now that's the way that God wants me to be. He wants me to be different. But when I came, the first time I walked through the doors of Laminin. Okay, I think I need to go back for a minute. I'm sorry.
No, don't worry. Nothing to apologize for.
I got to tell you what happened to my little girl. Okay, when she was 2 years old, I was working at a chicken plant. And so she was going over to her Mimi's, which is my husband's aunt. She was going to her Mimi's, and I went to give her a bath one day, and she asked me not to hurt her butt. And I asked her if somebody hurt her butt, and she said, yes. And she said, she told the person's name. She said that he did, and he covered my mouth. And I had found out that my baby had been sodomized. Everything was going really, really good, and this almost, like, it almost completely destroyed everything that I had. I mean, I lost it. She had to have surgery. She had a hernia. They had to sew her bottom back together on her little tummy. She had a hernia on her tummy. And I think that was the hardest pill out of everything I've ever done. That was the hardest pill for me to swallow. I felt like it was relevant for me to say that. So that's when I guess, oh, God, why? I surrender everything to you. Now I'm done. You know, because some people, when they surrender, they're like, okay, I think I'm going to give this to God, but I'm going to keep this because I still need to have control over that. And that's when I was like, okay, I don't need to have control over anything. This is obviously not what I needed to do. So when I got, first time I ever walked through the doors of Laminin, you could feel the peace in here. You could just feel it. And I was uncomfortable, of course. I was uncomfortable because of my thoughts and my feelings. Because, I mean, these people, I don't know how they're going to look at me. I don't know how they're going to think of me. And whenever they started talking, it was like, come on in. I mean, it was like I was home. It was like I was at home. And they gave me the demonstration that I needed of who God was. And they equipped me. And so now from moving from Lebanon, I have started where I'm working. I guess I'm a part of a ministry. I want to say I'm the president and put titles on it, but you know, God's blessing me, and I'm thinking about buying a recovery house and working with women that are going through and suffering with the things that I've been through, and people come to me for advice and know everything that I've done. You know, it's making me, I guess they're turning my mess into a message and my test into a testimony. I think about it. When I gave my life to God, it wasn't mine anymore. It was His. It became His life to do whatever He wants to with. So it's history, His story, history. So instead of putting a period, I just put a comma.
And when you came to Laminin and you were here, how long were you here? You said it felt like home. What were some of the things you learned, I guess, through that process about being comfortable and saying that you said this is a place that made you comfortable. It felt like home.
They loved on me every time I walked through the doors. You could feel peace every time I walked through the doors. They were willing to give of themselves no matter what. It was like, you know, lemon is the protein molecule that holds our bodies. It's in the shape of a cross. It's the protein molecule that holds our bodies together. And that's kind of what I felt like, that God was the center of this place and that He was holding us together, like that protein molecule of the name Laminin. It was just, I don't know, it was just the love that I felt, the true, like, without stipulations love that I felt. You know, I can just, because of what I've been through, I can discern whether it's real or not. You know, and I can't, evil and good can't coexist. And so I've always felt comfortable.
I wanted to ask you a tough question, and I think it's a difficult question. In light of all of the stuff that happened with your mom and everything that went on, how have you found forgiveness for those things? Because what went on with your mom really set you on your path forward in your life. Yeah, how do you find that forgiveness for her?
It wasn't anything that I could do. There's no way that a person could possibly do that without God taking it from them. It's like if I hold a cup or a glass of water, it's not very heavy for when you're first holding it. But the longer that you hold on to it, the heavier that it's going to get. When all you have to do is set the glass of water down. All you have to do is set it down. God took it from me. He took it from me when I set it down, and I didn't have to pick it back up. It was holding me bondage. It was given the person that I was not forgiven. It was given them power over my life, and I refused to allow that. I mean, I got to teach my daughter. She's what's here when I'm gone. She's what's going to be next, and I won't. I hope to God that she never has to go through anything that I have. But I think that God, He don't ever waste anything, and I know that, and that's what gives me hope. It makes me able to forgive. God doesn't. He's not going to waste that. He's going to use everything that I've been through. There's a silver lining in everything, no matter how bad it sucks.
And here you are sort of showing that anybody can change regardless of what they've gone through and that God can change them. You know, and Missy, I wanted to ask you, because in just hearing this and knowing your passion for laminin and everything you've done, what has Brandy's story taught you that maybe you wouldn't have expected?
There's more to this world than our own story. And also with Brandy too, when she came to me and said, I have to move on. I can't stay here anymore. I was like, wait, what? No, I want you here. You know, wait, what are you doing? But what she was doing was bettering her life. So that's what I tell most of the girls when they start working here is your goal in life shouldn't be to be here forever. This is kind of a transition place, a safe place. You can learn a skill. So, but the goal here is to move on and do some great things. Well, Brandy graduated. She has a degree now and counsels, you know, she has a degree to counsel autistic children. And so to see her use that brokenness to help other vulnerable people, people who may be outcast, who may not have that love all of the time. That's exactly what we're here to do, is to use our story, his story, to better somebody else's life. And that's what she's doing. And I'm so proud of her. You know, I mean, I miss her. She's not here every day, but I know what she's doing out there. I hear things. I trust that even though she's not perfect, none of us are, but that's why Jesus came. So just because you've given your life to Christ does not mean that you are now perfect and that you do everything correctly. And the older I get, the more I have realized that we all have a story. Everybody has a story. And so, you know, being on Duck Dynasty and having all these books that all of my family members have written, you know, we hear these people, they'll say, oh, we love your story. Or, wow, y'all really have some stories. We didn't know that. Everybody has a story. We just had a platform to share it. Brandy has a horrendous story, but also a magnificent story of redemption. So one of the worst I've ever heard turns out to be one of the best because of what Jesus did. So that's one thing that I love about want to do this podcast, is because everybody has a story. And to think that, like what you said, I'm going to correct you on something.
Okay.
Because when Brandy said, I'm different, I'm an outcast, that's Satan saying that to you even today when you say that I was just different. I'm just different. Oh, Satan loved that. Because if he can isolate you even now, then he's still got a chance, you know, to get back in there and tell you you're different from everybody else. Even though Jesus saved you, you're still different. And it's just wrong. We're all different from each other, but we're all the same through Jesus's blood. And that's what makes us whole and complete. Nothing of what we did, nothing about our outside circumstances make us different. Jesus makes us whole. And so still daily struggles, everybody still has daily struggles, and the thoughts of I'm not worthy, I don't have value, and they can creep in when you least expect it. You know, you're thinking you're rocking and rolling, you know, things are going along really good. And then, you know, something happens and you're like, oh, I can't believe that they think that of me, you know, or whatever it is. And so that's the normal behavior, no matter what your past is.
Or any setback, you fall back into old patterns and you catch yourself thinking things about yourself that you've tried to overcome thinking. And I mean, Brandy, your story is horrible, but then also incredible because of that pivot point. You know, every Christian has a pivot point, but not all of us have one that's as pronounced or as stark as yours. And I think you have so much to offer people because yours is just so deep and, you know, as I said, pronounced. I know Lee Strobel has a book, The Case for Grace, and I think the whole point is that people's stories like yours about really life change, that those are the best evidence for Christianity, that God's change in people is the best evidence. And, you know, nothing can change somebody like Jesus can.
Thank you. It's just a renewing. It's a renewing of our mind, just a daily transformation of renewing my mind. And I still got a long ways to go.
We all do, right? It's amazing. Your story, especially the forgiveness aspect, being able to forgive other people and not being controlled by the anger that comes with the things that have happened to us.
Which I'm sure is also a daily struggle. Yeah. As well.
My mom got murdered a month before my daughter was born.
Oh, wow.
So I had to go to her grave to get closure and forgiveness. And my dad died at 37 from shooting up drugs in a nursing home. So mm-hmm. He had AIDS. He couldn't take care of himself. And so the only way I got was, was through a grave. So
thank you so much for sharing your story. And Missy, thank you for doing this. It's important to tell people these stories and to help them realize that there's hope.
Right. That's the purpose, is not just to, again, say something that's dramatic and kind of, wow people, but there may be somebody out there right now that's listening that has been through one aspect of Brandy's life or 10 aspects of Brandy's life and think they can never get through it. There's no hope for them at all. They're destined to live this life and die in vain. And their life means nothing. And that's completely wrong. It's completely false. And that's what Satan is loving about this world right now, is that the more grasp that he has on that thought process, the more soldiers he gets. And it's just completely wrong. And that's what I wanted to have happen through this podcast series, is to hear these women's voices, their stories from their own lips, and the truth and the openness and the vulnerability, and then of course the change and the hope now that they have.
Well, thank you both so much. This has been great.
Faithwire.com.